on. We are here with you on the Global Reality right here on the TruthNet Radio Network. I'm your host, Josh Reeves. Thank you so much for being with us today for the broadcast. We're running late, and we had technical difficulties, so we're just now getting on the air. We are scheduled to have Jim Mars with us. We're going to try to connect with Jim now. Just gave his number to Mike. Hopefully, we'll be able to get him on the show here. We're sorry about the delay. We'll try to pull it together and have some sort of semblance of a normal show for you. Yeah, here we are. Thank you. This is I'm completely thrown off. This is Tuesday, July 22nd, 2008. We're going to be coming to you live for the next 3 hours. We're scheduled to have our guest, Jim Mars. Hopefully we'll still be able to get him on and whatnot. I wanted to let everybody know we are tentatively, we're not going to be here on Friday. I've got some business I have to attend to, and hopefully try to get some footage and whatnot for my film. That's going to be coming up on Friday, so we won't be here on Friday. So we'll go ahead and mark that on your calendar. Anyway, I don't even know what to say here because we're running late, and I'm just, you know, I don't know what to say. Anyway, here we are. Hopefully we'll get Jim Mars up on the show here in a minute. But, yeah, if we are trying to have some sort of a semblance of a normal show. We're running late, so this is causing all sorts of chaos with technical difficulties. But I do hear that we do have a guest. So our guest today, ladies and gentlemen, we have a special show for you, even though it's we're going to try to get this going. Author and researcher Jim Mars. Jim has written many books from Crossfire to Rule by Secrecy to Alien Agenda to his newest book, The Rise of the Fourth Reich, which is what we're going to be talking about today. His newest book, really, I tell you, you know, here's the thing about this new book that Jim Mars has written. My first question out of the gates for him is going to be, you know, where do you come up with the idea to write a book like this, because this covers everything. It covers so much about what we talk about here on the program quite a bit, is who is in charge, everything from Project Paperclip to the new regime, on and on and on. We are going to get into today, so sit back, kick back with your favorite beverage of choice. This is going to be a humdinger of a show. Ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, please welcome to the broadcast Mr. Jim Mars. Jim, thank you so much for coming on with us.
Well, it's a pleasure to be with you today, Josh.
Yeah, finally, we had a few technical difficulties there at the beginning. We got on late, so we apologize for the delay. Yeah, Jim, it's been a long time. I hadn't had you on since back when we were doing the one-hour show, and now we're doing the three-hour show, and I thought it was time to get you back up again, and just so happens you have a new book out, which you were gracious enough to send to me. And I had to tell you, just reading through this, I mean, I had thought that I knew pretty much everything there was to know. But, Jim, some of the dots that you've connected in this book are unbelievable. Let's start at the beginning. I mean, where is the real nexus point, Jim? I mean, we know, obviously, it was after World War II. But, really, where did this idea of the new Reich taking over America, where did that really spawn from?
Well, it actually goes back to the turn of the 20th century when the royalty in Europe, for the most part, collapsed following World War I, and that's when the international bankers, primarily centered in the Bank of England, but also on the continent of Europe and in America, got together, created what I call a secret society, the Council on Foreign Relations, which is not truly secret. I mean, they have an office building, they have a website, you know, they issue position papers. But I call it secret because you and I cannot join. You have to be invited to join, and you have to undergo a scrutiny by their board, and they have to be totally confident that you adhere to their worldview and to their agenda, which is, in their own words, globalization. In other words, they want to try to take over the world, basically, is what it comes down to. Now, they started off by funding and creating communist socialism in Russia at the end of World War I. But the problem was, is it just kind of like in the French Revolution, it kind of got out of hand. And the next thing you know, there were strong communist parties in France and Italy and England and even in the United States, and they had formed the Internationale, and they were going around, you know, saying workers of the world unite, and it looked like they were going to try to bring a one-world socialistic program under communism to the entire world. Well, these globalist financiers didn't want that because that would prevent them from playing off one nation or economic bloc against the other to generate maximum profit and control. So in the 1920s, they reached into Germany, which they saw as the first block against the spread of Russian communism, and they found an army intelligence agent who they then began to fund and back as he began to build his own National Socialist political party. The basic tenets of this National Socialist Party and the Communist Party were almost identical. The difference was that the definition of its name, National Socialism could be confined within national boundaries, leaving them free to play off one nation or bloc against the other. And of course, this army intelligence agent was Adolf Hitler. And so Hitler was backed not only by the industrialists and the bankers of Germany, but with tremendous support from Wall Street and from the Bank of England. And we have very well-known American families like the Rockefellers and the Harrimans, the Bushes, who were totally supportive and helped put Hitler in power and build his power. And then sure enough, he served his purpose because in June of 1941, Hitler launched the Operation Barbarossa, the attack against Russia. And as we all know from history, the German panzers were able to just crash through the Russian lines and encircle whole armies and whole divisions, and they didn't get stopped until they were practically at the gates of Moscow. But now, history really doesn't explain why did he do that. Did he just wake up one morning and say, I'm going to attack Russia? Well, we now know, thanks to documents that have been coming out of the former Soviet Union, is that Stalin had realized he would never be able to conquer Europe by a free vote. Nobody was going to vote in communism. So he had decided the only way to make Europe, Western Europe, communist was a military invasion. And he had scheduled for July 1941 a massive invasion of Europe. And he had 22,000 tanks at his disposal, many of them heavy models, while the only force to oppose him would have been the German army, and they only had 3,600 tanks. So if they had tried to defend against this horde from the east, they probably would have lost. So their only hope was a preemptive strike, which is exactly what Hitler did in 1 month before Stalin was set to invade Europe. And in fact, Hitler himself said if he hadn't taken this action, Europe would have been lost. And of course, we never get taught that in school. In fact, all we are taught about Hitler and his Third Reich is that here this madman took control of this country and was finally defeated. They really don't get into the nuances of National Socialism. But even Churchill said that he wasn't necessarily opposed to National Socialism. He just didn't want Germany in control of it. And the bankers in France and Britain and America, they didn't want Germany controlling the world financial market, so they fought World War II. And then after the war, in probably the greatest untold story of the 20th century, they simply moved some of the biggest, most powerful Nazi leaders over to America. And we know that Wernher von Braun, one of the most highly decorated Nazis of them all, came over and was instrumental in building our space program.
We'll definitely get into that because I want to spend a lot of time talking about that because that's something we talk about quite a bit here on the program. What I want to do before we go forward, though, Jim, is go back. Draw a direct line for people from, say, the original formation of the Bavarian Illuminati in 1776, which was also funded by the Rothschilds and the Central European bankers, and also things like the Russell Trust. I mean, there is a direct line if we go all the way back. I mean, Proofs of a Conspiracy, written 1785. There is a direct line in this ideology for, you know, one world government and a new world order, predating Hitler, in that direct line that goes from 1776 all the way up to the Third Reich, Jim.
Well, that's absolutely correct. In fact, I deal with that in my book, Rule by Secrecy. And in fact, actually, you know, I've tracked it on back even past the Illuminati to some of the agendas of the ancient Knights Templars, which in turn created the Mason Guilds, which evolved into the Freemasons or Freemasonry, another one of the world's largest secret societies. And of course, tracked it all the way back to the mysteries of Egypt and even on past that. But I think that for most people, that we just simply need to know that since the days of World War One, there has been an ongoing plan to break the world into separate socialistic blocks that can be played off against each other, and they're coming close to fruition. We now have the European Union. They're working hard, and there's already a lot of information out there about the soon-to-be North American Union, which would probably eventually be blended with the already established South American Union. And then, of course, it'll be no problem whatsoever to put together an Asian Union, because most of the nations in Asia are already pyramid power societies, which means all you have to do is bring in the top of the pyramid and put them on the board of directors or buy them out or whatever, and then you've got control over those nations. So I think what we see, the game plan was pretty much outlined by a British socialist, a Fabian socialist named Eric Arthur Blair, who in 1948 wrote under the pen name George Orwell and wrote a very famous book called 1984. And he outlined, I think, what he knew was the game plan of these globalist socialists, which is to break the world into three economic blocks. In 1984, it was Oceania, Asiana, and East Asiana. Today, it's the European Union, the North American Union, and the soon-to-be Asian Union. And then you play two of these blocks off against each other continually, and then when they reach some sort of victory or compromise or settlement, then you turn and they go to war with the other bloc, and you just keep this turmoil going to maximize your profits and your control.
Well, that's really been the real nexus point, Jim, that I found in looking at into my research and looking into both sides. You know, if you want to look into the banking end or the multinational corporation end that controls the financial markets and controls that end, then you've got on the right, you have sort of your Knights of Malta, evangelical right to control religions and control the military-industrial complex. What I found at the heart of that is this, you know, this sort of Milner Rounds Table, Cecil Rhodes, Fabian Socialist movement is at the heart of all these movements. And that's one of the things that, and you talked a bit about it there at the very beginning, is this, you know, difference between communism and, you know, international and national socialism. There is a big difference, Jim, that people really need to understand. Communism and national socialism are not necessarily the same thing, even though they're very similar.
Well, they are both socialism. Okay, one, and they both, here's the thing, this is why these internationalists, these globalists, desire socialism. Because under any social program, no matter how benign it may be, such as Social Security, or No Child Left Behind, or whatever, it always requires a central administration. And when you have central administration, these globalists realize they have the power and the wealth to control the central administration, which then quickly turns into fascism. Okay? The definition of fascism is the blending of state and corporate power. In fact, Mussolini, I quote him in my book, The Rise of the Fourth Reich, he said that fascism may not actually be the correct term. The term fascism comes from Mussolini's black-shirted fascistis, and their emblem was the fasces, or the sticks wrapped together around an axe, which is the symbol of, dates back all the way to the Roman Empire, and it is the symbol of central authority. And Mussolini himself said, though, that fascism probably isn't the correct term, that the correct term is corporatism. So in other words, when the corporate life of the country dictates to the government and is in bed with the government, and you have this blending of state and corporate power, that's the very dictionary definition of fascism. And that's exactly what we see thriving in the United States today. The only difference is that in fascist Italy and in Nazi Germany, the state gained control over the corporations. And in modern America, the corporations have gained control over the state. But the end result's the same. And the corporations that have now gained control over the federal government are the corporations that have been bought up and blended and merged with older groups who were either founded by Nazis or infiltrated by Nazis, or were already pro-Nazi even before World War II.
And that's the amazing thing to me is looking at how all these connections. I mean, you've got IG Farben, you've got J.P. Morgan, you have all of these interests that were very much there in World War II, which are very much still there today. And the amazing thing to me has been Jim, has how all these people are still. I mean, look at how we had the overthrow of Augusto Pinochet Salvador Allende and the installation of Augusto Pinochet. That was an ITT Farben deal on behalf of the Rockefellers with Kissinger there. That whole thing, which just so happened to happen on 9/11 in 1973. I mean, this stuff continues, and it's amazing how your JFK.
It just goes on and on, and it's all interconnected because Herman Schmitz was the one of the founders and one of the chief stockholders in IG Farben, which was the giant chemical combine that had control over more than 100 U.S. corporations because they gave them rights and patents and licenses, okay? And at one point, Schmitz, head of the IG Farben combine, according to published reports, owned as much stock in Standard Oil of New Jersey as John D. Rockefeller did. So they're all mixed in together. The banker, Max Warburg, who was a prominent German banker with the German Deutsche Bank, and who also sat on the board of directors of the Hamburg-America steamship line, along with Prescott Bush, the grandfather of our current president. So you can see the interconnectedness of all this big business, and it's always geared to and you mentioned the Illuminati early on. There is, of course, today stringent arguments over whether or not the Illuminati still exist, and it doesn't really matter, okay, because what is absolutely demonstrable is that people within these secret societies, people within this wealthy ruling globalist elite are practicing Illuminati ideals, namely their chief founding philosophy, which is the end justifies the means. Okay? And as a result, when you truly believe that the end justifies the means and you feel like your end result is worthwhile, then you are free to lie, steal, cheat, kill, do whatever in the heck you have to do to further your agenda. And that's what these people do. They'll buy you up. They'll shut you up. They will, and if none of that works, they'll kill you. And that is Nazi methodology. In Germany in the 20s and 30s, if you tried to oppose the Nazis, they beat you up. And if you kept coming after them, then they killed you. Today in modern America, if you try to stand up to them, like John F. Kennedy, Robert Kennedy, or Paul Wellstone, or JFK Jr., you die in a plane crash, or you get shot in the head. it's just Nazi methodology, and we're just roaming down the same path that the Germans took.
That's the thing, Jim, is criminals need funding, and that's where people get wrapped up in these, well, who's in control, who's running? Look, the bankers are running on either side. It's just like this impending World War III that we have. They're going to sit back and fund both sides. They don't care who wins. Their agenda goes on unimpeded.
That's exactly right, and they've taken their steps. They've built the giant underground survival facilities. They've got their own little secret space program that they feel like they can probably even go off-planet if things get bad enough. And, of course, the Bushes have their bailout already ready. They recently purchased 7,000 acres in Paraguay. So I guess, you know, if the courts start coming after them for their criminal deeds, then I guess they'll just flee off to South America just like their Nazi forefathers.
Oh, yeah, and down there with the Reverend Sung Young Moon, that's who they brought that property with. And, of course, we know how much money he's put into the evangelical right, how much where his funding comes from. They call him the Messiah, and, of course, the Bushes are going to run down there with him. I mean, these people have all sorts of contingency plans. And later on in the broadcast, I do want to talk about the secret space program, Wernher von Braun, the Nazi flying disc that they are working on, and other things. Because, I mean, this is what we're seeing lately, Jim, and again, we'll talk more. This whole ramp up with all this stuff on Mars, I mean, mass UFO sightings all over the planet. I mean, these people may be able to getting ready to go roll out with something that the Nazis may have been working on. But, you know, really, the main thing about all of this is the fact that, you know, you have the pundits of the mainstream media, and they like to throw around this term Nazi. Oh, it's Bush is a Nazi, this and that. But they never give you any information. This book nails down the information to show you that Nazis are still in charge of this country, and the ideologies have never died.
That's exactly true. That's the biggest secret of the 20th century, is that while we defeated the German nation in World War II, we did not defeat the Nazis. We only forced them to move, and ironically enough, they came over here, and they began buying up corporations, and the big corporations bought up the smaller corporations. I know just maybe 12 years ago, I was concerned because, having been in the media my whole career, I was very concerned that the media had fallen into the hands of about a dozen corporations. Well, today it's down to five. Five corporations, many with interlocking boards of directors, control everything you see and hear. And I'm not just talking about news. I'm talking about DVDs, movies, books, magazines, billboards, satellite, cable, you name it. Five corporations own them all. And the one that really gets me is that the largest publisher in the English language today is Bertelsmann AG of Germany, who it's still a privately owned corporation. And the Mohn family, Heinrich Mohn, back during World War II, was a member of the support group for the Nazi SS, and Bertelsmann was the largest publisher of Nazi propaganda for the German army. Okay? And today, they control almost all the major publishers in this country, except for a couple. Now, that is just amazing. I mean, I could run down the whole list. Random House, Fawcett, Ballantyne. I could go on and on. And they're all under control by Bertelsmann, this German corporation. It's really kind of freaky when you really get to looking at the truthful details.
Well, we're coming up on a break here, Jim, but when we come back, I want to get into Rudolf Hess. I want to talk about him and get you to really break down that whole situation for our listeners as well. We're joined today by Jim Mars. His new book is The Rise of the Fourth Reich, The Secret Society That Threatened to Take Over America. You can get that at jimmars.com and amazon.com today. We're going to take a break, come back, and talk more with Jim. This is the Global Reality on the TruthNet Radio Network. Stay with us. Ladies and gentlemen, we are back here with you on the Global Reality on the TruthNet Radio Network. We're joined today by my guest, author Jim Mars, author of the new book, The Rise of the Fourth Reich, The Secret Societies, The Threat to Take Over America. And I tell you, I'm just if you don't read another book this year, folks, you need to read this book, because this is one of those things where it took everything that I already knew and brought it to this, you know, to this nexus point of going, okay, here's another dotted and connected. And Jim, you know, quotes, it has a lot of information in here from Eustace Mullins as well. And, you know, we've had Eustace Mullins on the program before, and a lot of the information pertaining to that he had done with exposing the Federal Reserve and on and on and on really nexuses in with this idea of the people that have stayed in control. But really what I want to talk about now, Jim, is and you know, I want to kind of go over the book and kind of give people an outline without giving too much away. But let's talk about Rudolf Hess and
okay.
talk about what the what that entails and the information people need to know about him.
Well, you know, Rudolf Hess has been relegated to kind of a footnote in history. The official line is that in May of 1941, he flew to England in an effort to try to secure a peace agreement between Great Britain and Germany and stop the war at that point. Both Hitler and Churchill said, oh, he's just a lone nut, another lone nut in history. But when you dig into it, the facts show that it was something very much different, and that's why I do devote a section of my new book, The Rise of the Fourth Reich, to the Rudolf Hess affair, because it gives us a little insight into the maneuvering up at the top echelon, up at the top levels of the people who actually are running the world. For one thing, Hess's flight was not a sudden and spontaneous thing on his part. His Messerschmitt 110 was actually modified by none other than Willie Messerschmitt himself. He was giving flying lessons by Hitler's own pilot. He had charts and graphs made for him. This was an overture to try to reach the British royals, who, after all, are of German descent. Before they were the Mountbatten, they were the Battenbergs, and on back. And the whole idea was to bring a peace between Britain and Germany so that they combined could confront Stalin and communism, who they now had reason to believe was about to launch an attack on Europe. The fly in the ointment was Winston Churchill, who was more in tune and in line with these globalists that we've been talking about, and they had already determined that, yes, they wanted Hitler to stop the invasion of Europe, but they wanted to stop Hitler also. And so it was Churchill who maneuvered to continue the war. But the big plan messed up. Hess ran out of gas. He couldn't find where he wanted or was supposed to land at the Duke of Hamilton's estate. And he was forced to bail out. He broke his ankle. He got captured by the Home Guard. And the whole thing came public. So everybody had to run for cover and disavow the whole thing. But it's fascinating to see the investigation into what actually happened to Hess, because after the war, Hess, of course, was held in Spandau Prison up until the 1980s, and there was finally a worldwide movement to say, you know, let the poor guy out. He's been there his entire life. He's sick. He's old. He's about to die. But just as they were about to release him, and while the British were on guard, he supposedly committed suicide. So there seems to be something about the Hess mission that they didn't want everybody to know. And one of the key factors here is that after Alan Dulles, who had been a lawyer for Sullivan Cromwell that represented some of the banks and financial institutions that were supporting the Nazis, and then became director of the CIA in the 50s, while his brother, John Foster Dulles, who was Secretary of State in the Eisenhower administration, he sent a Dr. Ewan Cameron to Spandau to examine Hess and told him he suspected this was not the real Hess. You know, so we have a situation of a duplicate being used. And yet, why would anybody allow themselves to be put in prison for the rest of their life impersonating somebody else? Well, the key here is that he sent Dr. Ewan Cameron. Ostensibly, he was to examine Hess for scars that would have proven that he was the real Hess, because the real Hess suffered wounds in World War I, and there would have been scars to show this. Interestingly enough, the British would not let Dr. Cameron examine Hess. But the key thing is that any competent doctor could have checked Hess to find out if he had scars. The key thing is that he sent Dr. Ewan Cameron, who was a Canadian psychiatrist who was a founding member of our MK Ultra mind control experimentation. So obviously, Dulles had reason to believe that the Hess in custody was a mind control victim. It's a fascinating story.
Oh, goodness gracious. And, you know, and that also, Jim, that's unbelievable because, I mean, what about this information that supposedly Hess was passed the names of the members of the Golden Dawn and he was debriefed by the British intelligence agent and OTO member, founder, Aleister Crowley? What's going on with that? You can't tell me there's not something to do there with this whole double thing.
That's exactly true, and in fact, guess who else gets mixed into that blend was a British Secret Service agent named Ian Fleming, who ended up writing all the James Bond books. So, see, reality is sometimes stranger than fiction.
That's amazing. Yeah.
Well, they got Hess fired up on his mission by running in an astrologer who told him that in May of 1941 there was going to be this celestial alignment and that the time was propitious for him to go to England and that he would meet with these ranking and royal representatives and that he could arrange a peace accord with Germany. And that was one of the big impetus for his flight to England. And of course, we rarely hear about the occult side of World War II, but since you know about the OTO and Aleister Crowley, and then you understand that over everything else, World War II was a fight between these occult societies.
Yeah, our listening audience, Jim's really savvy to that because that's what we do here on this show. We tend to go a lot deeper and get into the secret societies. We get into the ancient societies as well. So our audience is pretty savvy to that, and that's a lot of what they're interested in is knowing, behind all of this. Yes, there is the front. What we see, just like 9/11, there is things that are there on the front, but at the back end of it, there is always these sort of ritualistic things that tie into these secret societies at every turn.
That's true, and anyone who has to understand current events in world history and disdains looking at the secret societies, they're never going to figure out the truth, because I don't care how smart you are, you could be the most brilliant person in the world, but if you operate in incomplete or erroneous information, then there's no way you're going to make a correct decision on anything.
No, that's I agree 100% with that. But that, Jim, do you have any indication? I know you get into some of this. And you mentioned the MK Ultra mind control program. What are the similarities between what we saw happen with the CIA and the various mind control operations, remote viewing operations, which I know you've written a book about, we talked about last time. And what was the precursor to that? Did that originate out of Nazi Germany as well?
What came out of Nazi Germany?
I'm asking, did we see a precursor to the sort of MK Ultra and mind control operation? Oh. Did we see a precursor of that in Nazi Germany?
Absolutely. Absolutely. In fact, it was Germany that spawned the whole psychiatric profession. That goes back to the time of World War I when and the late 1800s when the chief therapy for mental illness was to put you in a straitjacket and lock you in a cold dungeon cell. But then they began to work on other means of trying, since they found out they couldn't cure anybody with mental illness, then they tried to see if they couldn't alter or prevent mental illness, and of course then it was up to them to decide what was a mental illness. In the late 1800s, there was a German psychiatrist who wrote a paper basically stating that anyone who was French probably suffered a mental illness, and that most women suffered mental illness. And in World War I, when you had many, many German soldiers just, fleeing from the front and deserting, they decided we had to do something about that. So in Germany, the mental health community came up with electroshock therapy. And it was quite effective, because after a few sessions of electroshock therapy, most of the soldiers said, okay, I'll go back to the front. And so the German military got behind psychiatry and really gave it a boost. And then from then on, they moved in and started bundling up their efforts with the IG Farben chemical combine and began to move into the area of drugs. And that's why today in the United States, you know, you used to never see an ad on television for a drug. And now, if they're not trying to sell you a truck, they're trying to sell you a drug. And Big Pharm, the big pharmaceutical corporations, have pretty well taken over as one of the biggest money-making organizations in this country. And this is why, and I deal with this in my book, The Rise of the Fourth Reich, everyone is concerned with the school shootings, which, hey, when I was growing up, I grew up in Texas. Everybody took a gun to school. They had guns in the back of our pickup trucks. And everybody had a gun. Nobody shot anybody. Okay? But now we've had all this rash of school shootings, and if you look at the heart of it, you'll find out the real problem is not guns. The real problem is these virtually every one of these school shooters has been on or just coming off of psychotropic drugs. Ritalin, Prozac, okay? All of these type drugs are just weirding people out and causing them to commit suicide, causing them to kill people, and yet you never hear about that in the mass media because they don't want to lose one of their biggest advertisers.
No,
so it all stems from Nazi technology.
Yeah, so that's another connection that I don't think a lot of people have put together up to this point, Jim, is the connection between pharmaceutical companies like IG Farben and the ideologies of eugenics that came out of the Tavistock Institute.
Exactly, because the same people that were into the pharmaceutical industries were the same people that began and supported the eugenics movement. And the eugenics movement, which actually got a more firm foothold here in the United States in the late 1800s and early part of the 20th century than it did in Germany, nevertheless was the philosophical basis for what became the extermination programs in Nazi Germany.
Yeah, and that's exactly what we're seeing today. I mean, none of this has ever stopped. I mean, we're seeing more of a ramp up of eugenics now in this day and age through various UN programs, through the GMO foods, on and on and on that we've seen. And this is part of the population culling. And these same people are in charge. I mean, there's genocide going on. We've got the Crusades 2.0, as I like to call it, that's being led by Blackwater over in the Middle East. I mean, that's really what it is, Jim. That's what I'm making a film on right now. I mean, this is what we're seeing. The same people are doing the same things all over again. And America is too stupid to see it.
Well, you know, the French philosopher Georges Sandiana said, "Those who do not learn from history are doomed to repeat it." And I guess we're just doomed to repeat it because even at the most broadest possible viewpoint, look at this. In early 1933, Germany was a republic, a democratic republic, the Weimar Republic. And Hitler was only chancellor, kind of like vice president. And yet, towards the end of January, their parliament building burned down, the Reichstag. Hitler and his Nazis blamed it on communist terrorists. He said, "Give me the power, and I will protect you from these terrorists," even though now the evidence points to the fact that the Reichstag was burned by the Nazis themselves, since it could be tracked back to Goering's office. And they rushed through the Enabling Act, which then set up a detention centers, which quickly became concentration camps, demanded a national identification, gun confiscation and registration. And what do we get? We get the attacks of 9/11, buildings burning, falling down, a rush through Patriot Act, which has, and then the creation of Homeland Security and the demand for national ID cards, which are slated to go into effect next year, by the way. And if you don't have a federally approved ID card under the Real ID Act, you're not going to get to fly or get on a bus or open a bank account or even hold a job. Now, if that's not Nazi, I don't know what is.
Oh, yeah. Hitler would be salivating over this stuff. I mean, even, you know, even he didn't think about doing this wide out in the open. But, you know, I mean, the Reichstag fire, we go back to that. I mean, look, they had their Oswald already wrapped up with a nice bow on him, ready to go right there, too, didn't they?
That's right. A half-dressed Dutch mental retarded youth who just happened to be carrying his Communist Party card on him. Yeah, you know, how fortuitous. Just like on 9/11, all of those hijackers and all those planes just burned up in the massive fires and the collapse of the World Trade Centers, but by God, they found that paper passport that identified one of them as this Muslim extremist. How fortuitous. And how planted can you get?
Oh, man, I mean, as you know, it's just so amazing to me, Jim, how it ever seems to work out just perfectly for these people, doesn't it? I mean, right when they need a patsy, or right when they need that perfect piece of evidence to connect it back, and to always, you know, keep the chain of plausible deniability intact, they get it. And,
right.
You know, and we're conspiracy theorists for bringing it up, yeah, you know.
Of course. And speaking of, now, right now the big news is we've captured this guy from the Balkans who was some war criminal, and the headlines are all full of that. And, of course, you know, chances are we knew where he was all along. We may have had him in captivity all along. They were just waiting for the right time, and the right time is now, because now with the news columns filled with the capture of this East European war criminal, there's no room for the stories about how that in other countries they are now issuing warrants for Bush for war crimes.
Jim, was Hitler a Rothschild Central European banker, Ashkenazi Zionist asset set up from the jump?
Well, you know, and I covered this in my previous book, The Rule by Secrecy, what the OSS discovered during World War II based on police records from Austria was that Hitler's grandmother became pregnant with Hitler's father when she was serving as a housemaid in the home of Solomon Rothschild there in Vienna. And they arranged a marriage between her and a guy named Schickelgruber, and they packed her off, and she delivered a baby boy, which grew up to be Hitler's father. So, according to the OSS, U.S. intelligence, Hitler was a quarter Jewish. So, yes, he was definitely connected by blood and by probably ideology with the European Rothschilds, who were behind his rise to power. And in allowing, if not encouraging, the Holocaust, what happened there was that the Orthodox Jews of Europe were sent to the concentration camps, and many of them exterminated, particularly the religious leaders, the rabbis, which then cleared away the biggest obstacle to the political movement known as Zionism, which was an effort by the Rothschilds to create a nation state in the Middle East so they could have a foot in the door and gain control over some of those mineral oil resources of the Middle East. And the biggest stumbling block to their plans was the Orthodox Jews, who said the Torah taught that the Messiah would come and would free them and would lead them to a new land of their own. It was not up to us, not up to them, to go and aggressively throw people out of their land and take it for themselves. So something had to be done to eliminate this, and the Holocaust in Europe during World War II was pretty successful in wiping out a lot of the priesthood, the rabbis of the Orthodox Jews.
And let's be clear about all of this. I mean, and I've talked to you about this many times, Jim. This is one of the things you tipped me to off a while back, is all of this, you know, I mean, we can get down to all this business and we'll get down to all the details, but at the end of it, it is all business, isn't it?
Right. It's all about the money. That's exactly true. And that's why you need to follow the money. You need to follow the money no matter what the issue is. Iraq, who's making all the money? Afghanistan, who's making all the money? Who allowed all the poppy fields to go back into production? The Taliban, religious idiots as they were, and I certainly have no real regard for them since they were desecrating and destroying some very valuable antiquities, and not to mention the way they treated women. But nevertheless, they were religious fanatics, and you know what? In 2003, they had destroyed about 90% of the opium crop, the opium, knocking the world heroin trade on its head. And so we invade Afghanistan, and all of a sudden it's all growing again, and now they've got bumper crops over there, and we've made no real effort to prevent it. And yet, if we really are in a war on drugs, why didn't they take that opportunity to easily wipe out the remaining 10% of the poppy fields and stop the heroin trade? Could it be because, as people have alleged for years, that our CIA and certain people within our government have been profiting from the flow of drugs, and that they did not want the heroin trade destroyed? So we invaded the sovereign country, Afghanistan, and one of the things we have accomplished is to restore the growth and cultivation of the poppy fields. Amazing.
Oh, surely not, Jim. I mean, surely the Bushes and the Harrimans and the Rockefellers haven't been involved in opium trading for years, have they? Surely not. Come on.
Well, only dating back to the 1800s and the Opium Wars.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, this is the thing. None of this stuff is new. They put a different face on it. They have a better way of covering it up, and that's it. I mean, we've had this control over opium. I mean, that's one of the key things I think that a lot of people miss when they do the research on the Rockefellers, and they're looking into what they control. They're looking into the banking system, Standard Oil, what is now ExxonMobil. Of course they know that, but this idea of controlling of the opium is sort of swept under the rug, even in the realm of the alternative research community, isn't it, Jim, sometimes?
Right, exactly. Well, that's the key to it. We have to keep our minds and our eyes open. Or it's like I always say, your mind is like a parachute. It works better when it's opened.
Well, we're coming up on a break and getting into the second hour. When we come back and get into the second hour, I want to talk about Nazi future weapons, Wernher von Braun, the advent of the Nazi space program, how that tied in with Project Paperclip, and what we've seen and what we continue to see today. I think that's a key thing that I want to get into because, Jim, I think that the program has never ended. You look at all these high-level people, and I'd also like to maybe try to get into what he had talked about in his final days with his assistant, Carol Rosen, when we come back from the break coming up at the top of the hour. We're joined today by author Jim Morris. His new book is The Rise of the Fourth Reich, The Secret Societies That Threaten to Take Over America. That's available at Amazon.com, JimMars.com, as well as all his other fine books, Rule by Secrecy, Crossfire. You can get all those books there. And this book is amazing. It's a big, thick, hardbound book, tons of information, things that you need. Go out and get a copy of it. I tell you, I don't give too many books endorsements, but this is one that I definitely think everybody needs to have. So we're going to come back, get into the second hour of broadcast with our guest Jim Morris right here on the Global Reality on the TruthNet Radio Network. Stay with us. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are back here with you in the second hour of the Global Reality right here on this Tuesday edition of the broadcast. We are joined today by legendary author and researcher Jim Morris. His new book is The Rise of the Fourth Reich, The Secret Societies That Threaten to Take Over America. That's available at JimMars.com, Amazon.com, and other fine book retailers across America. This book is so dense and has so much information in it that, again, regardless of how much you know, there's something in here that you can learn. What I want to take some time talking about in this segment with Jim is the various advanced weapon systems that the Nazis came up on, the space technology, Hermann Oberth, the V-2 rocket, on and on and on, and really get into and dissect it. But that's something our listeners would know that we've talked about here quite a bit, has been Wernher von Braun and his various comments that have been made about, first it would be communism, and then the threat would be terrorism, and then when that didn't work, it would be this staged alien invasion as a pretext for space-based weapons, and all of it would be a lie. And we see this ramp up of all these, the social conditioning that's going on with the UFO phenomenon right now, where mainstream news is giving it all sorts of play. They're saying they're having a full-scale invasion over in England right now. By the way, Lee Rogers has a great article up on roguegovernment.com right now. You all should go check out about the possibility of a false flag alien attack coming. You go get that, dig that article. But Jim, what I wanted to, in this segment, let's start off talking about Hermann Oberth, the V2 rockets, and really this idea of advanced technology that everyone in the world wanted to get their hands on that came out of Germany.
Well, that's true. In fact, but all of this was, of course, absolutely top secret. What I found most amazing, and I'm sure kind of raised your eyebrows in my new book, The Rise of the Fourth Reich, was how it now seems that, contrary to what we've been told, Nazi Germany actually did produce an atomic bomb and may have even used tactical nuclear weapons on the Eastern Front. But that was something we never heard about then and have still not heard about because, and the answer of why is simple, because Stalin was having trouble enough keeping the Russian population under control with this war going on. And I mean, you know, we've all read the stories, we've seen the movies where they had to shoot their own men to keep them to keep attacking. And if they had learned that the Nazis were using atomic weapons on them, then there would have been there could have been a huge revolt and overthrown the government, and you know, it would have been something else. So Stalin had to keep all this secret, and the Nazis, for their part, they were getting ready to drop a bomb on Manhattan. I have in my files a 1943 Luftwaffe command study of a blast radius on Manhattan Island. And at the end of the war, they had 40 of these huge 390 bombers that were at a base being built in Norway that had the range of reaching New York City, and the crews up there when the Allies finally overran the field and took it and captured it said that they were preparing for a mission to New York. So the Nazis had an atomic bomb, but they didn't use it, obviously. And why not? Well, by the time they had it ready to go, it was already in the spring of 1945, and the war was just about over. The Russians were moving in on Berlin. The Allies were moving in on Berlin from the west, and they didn't have a reliable delivery system. Their three-stage 810 rocket was unreliable. They couldn't really pinpoint where it would go. And these bombers were at a base that had not quite been completed. But I think the main reason that the Nazis did not use their atomic weapon was that I think at the upper echelons they realized that if they had dropped an atomic bomb on New York City and caused massive destruction, it would not have caused the United States to sue for peace. On the contrary, we probably would have destroyed Germany. We would have left no stone standing in retribution. And so, as a result, what are they going to do with their atomic weapons? They swapped it to the United States in exchange for immunity. And when you follow the course of our Manhattan Project, you suddenly realize that the bombs that we dropped on Hiroshima and Nagasaki, as was mentioned by one of the Manhattan members, was of German provenance. In other words, the Germans had tested this and knew it would work. In early 1945, Roosevelt was notified that we had only been able to enrich enough plutonium for one bomb, and of course we had to test it. And that was done at the Trinity site in New Mexico at Alamogordo, and it worked. Luckily for us, because I hope you and none of your listeners will ever forget this. At the time they set off the first atomic bomb blast in New Mexico, more than half of the scientists working on the Manhattan Project sincerely believed that when you started a nuclear fission reaction, that you would not be able to stop it, and that it would catch the atmosphere on fire and incinerate the world. But they set it off anyway. Luckily, their fears were unfounded. And the reason I say this is because, Josh, I'm sure you probably realize, too, that even as we're speaking somewhere in some deep underground government laboratory, they are actually tampering with the building blocks of the universe. And it could have some very adverse reactions for all of us if they take a misstep.
Yeah, the CERN facility. Yeah, the CERN facility that they just brought on. The CERN facility, the super collider facility they just brought on. That's a great example of that, Jim.
Yeah. You know, it's been theorized that if they create a black hole, it could suck in the Earth and everything around it, just destroy everything. But they're going right ahead with it, aren't they?
Oh, yeah, and of course, you look what they have outside of this thing. They have big, giant statues of Shiva, the god of creation and the end of creation, with giant skull and bones on it. And, of course, the CERN facility logo has a 666. And, I mean, these same people are up to no good. And the fact of the matter is, I mean, it's the same ideology that was behind the high-tech weaponry and the top-secret weaponry and their big mountain facility there in Nazi Germany that are behind things like the CERN super collider, Jim. I mean, these people are trying to play God.
Exactly. And, you know, we all should have read the Mary Shelley's Frankenstein to understand what happens when you try to play God. It usually comes back and bites you on the you-know-where.
Yeah, and that's, you know, and again, I think that's very deep-seated also in the ideologies of these people that are in the upper echelons of power. That's what people don't understand is we don't, as normal citizens, I mean, very few of us in the research community have any idea or any sort of reference point for just how much power these people in the upper echelons have and what sort of technology they have their hands on. And this stuff, I mean, this goes back to the ancient societies. This goes back to this idea of them trying to mimic whoever these people in the elites believe the creators were and trying to become one with the gods, so to speak. I mean, you know, the Nazis wanted to do that. They were over in Sumer and Babylon looking for the, you know, the Aryan technology. These people are doing the same thing. I mean, look what they did after the invasion of Iraq in 2003, Jim, looking for all these Sumerian artifacts. I mean, the same people are doing the same thing.
Well, that's one of the reasons that we're still having all this problem over in Iraq is that we violated standard military strategy, which is you set an objective, you go for the objective, and then you consolidate your holdings, your winnings, and then you move on to a new objective. We made a mad dash beeline to Baghdad, and what happened in Baghdad? The looting of the Iraqi National Museum, which according to French and German archaeological teams had been making amazing new discoveries in the ancient ruins of what had been the civilization of Sumer. And what's so hot about that? Well, there's a whole long story that I kind of outline in my book, The Rise of the Fourth Reich, that indicates that there was ancient technology which involved the manipulation of the energy at the atomic and subatomic level that apparently was known to some of these ancients, and possibly some of the recipes for accomplishing this manipulation of energy could be found on ancient scrolls and cuneiform tablets. And this is what they were after. This is what we were after. This is what the world globalists were after, to try to discover this ancient technology. Because if you can manipulate energy at the atomic and subatomic level, this makes petroleum superfluous. And, of course, they don't want that.
No, but there's no doubt about it, Jim, that what they're looking for is ancient technology. I mean, they're looking for, I mean, whether you want to call it the Anunnaki, the Nephilim, whatever you like to apply your name to. I mean, they're definitely, either whether they're looking for some sort of Nephilim Stargate, I've heard that said, some people believe that, either some sort of ancient blood that they could weaponize to create super soldiers out of. I've heard that put out there in the realm of scope. I mean, look, I mean, we talk about the ancient texts, they talk about the Anunnaki creating man out of clay. The Bible talks about God making man out of clay. And what did they take? They take these statues, these alien statues that are made out of clay. I mean, you're not going to tell me something wasn't going on there.
Exactly. Exactly. And we were told by mainstream media that Saddam Hussein believed himself the reincarnated King Nebuchadnezzar. Well, go back and read about King Nebuchadnezzar. He built a structure out of gold that has been translated as a fiery furnace, but it doesn't really mean that's what it was. Yeah. It was some kind of structure. It was built of gold. And then he tried to send, apparently, he was able to create energy fields within this structure, but when he sent his own people in there, they died. So he went and got the three Hebrew priests, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and said, make it work. And they said, well, you're not our king, and you don't believe in our God, and we're not going to work for you. So he said, well, I'm going to throw you in there, and you're either going to make it work or you're going to die. Well, if you'll read carefully in the Bible, they didn't just throw them in there. First, they donned their garments and their hats and their coats. Why this attention to their garments? Because, what, were they putting on anti-radiation suits or something? But anyway, they went in there, and the king said, are they in there? And he said, yeah. Are they dead? No, they're still alive. He said, in fact, there's four of them in there now. He said, well, who's the fourth person? They said, well, king, it's the Son of God. And then that's the last we hear of that. Who was this fourth person, and how did he get in there? Did this energy fields open up some sort of a time or dimensional portal? You know, so this is obviously there was some very exotic technology being used back in these biblical times, and of course that's what we're after.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, that's, you know, Bloomberg.com put out an article about a month and a half ago, that was talking all about, I mean, this is mainstream news, folks, Bloomberg.com, and he's talking about how, you know, the soldiers had trampled all these Babylonian artifacts, and they openly stated that Saddam Hussein was trying to rebuild Nebuchadnezzar's palace right there on those old remains. And they also stated that the cylinder seals and the cuneiform tablets that have come out of that era are now the number one hottest black market antiquity in the world. Again, Jim, got to ask yourself why.
Exactly. And let me point out that according to Colonel Matthew Bogdanos, who investigated the Iraqi National Museum looting for General Tommy Franks, he wrote an article in Archaeology magazine, and he said that although there was a crowd that was probably hired looters, hired rioters to cover for an inside job, for a planned operation. He said that the basement, the looting of items from the basement from the Iraqi National Museum was an inside job, and said that guards were suspiciously missing. Whoever came in there had keys to the vaults. They bypassed expensive-looking fakes. They knew what they were after, and they went for it, and it was in the basement. And what's in the basement? Newly found artifacts and things that have not yet been cataloged or prepared for exhibition. And, of course, I have in my files the new mainstream news reports from 1999, 2000, 2001 that were stating that French and German archaeological teams were making, quote, amazing new discoveries in Iraq. And that's exactly where these amazing new discoveries would have been kept. And this was a planned operation to go in there and seize them. And I'm totally with you, Josh, in that I believe that this was an effort to get a hold of this ancient technology.
No doubt about it. I mean, that's, you know, I mean, again, we only go by what they openly talk about and what they do. I mean, you go back to the Sumerian texts, and they talk about, you know, the ones that were created by the Anunnaki, and they talk about the various ones, and they talk about these, you know, these Caucasoids, the ones that were put in the roles of kingship. And then you look into these people like the Bush family and, you know, the Saxe-Coburn-Gothas and all this, and they're all obsessed with their bloodlines, and they're basically glorified horse breeders. I mean, you know, these people don't keep these bloodlines, you know, pure like this for no reason, Jim, and then just call us the profane and relegate us to the fringe. What we're seeing, what we saw with the Nazis, this nexus in with your book, and what we're seeing now is a plan that, as you stated and as you talk about also in your book, Rule by Secrecy, goes back to those ancient civilizations. And if we don't connect all the dots, we're never going to have any chance of being able to formulate solutions against these people.
Isn't that the truth? And what's amazing is that now we're in an election year, and it looks like the real front runner is Barack Obama, who we find out is a cousin to Dick Cheney, according to Dick Cheney's wife, okay, who found this out in researching the family genealogy. Now, what do you suppose the odds are that this presidential contender, who most people consider a black man, what are the odds that he is blood related to Dick Cheney? Don't we have any other choice? Can't we vote for somebody who's not of the bloodline?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, and I actually covered that a couple of weeks ago. Yeah, he's related to Jimmy Carter as well, which is interesting because he had Brendan Brzezinski advising his campaign. I mean, he's related to four or five other past presidents. He's related to people like Brad Pitt, Justin Timberlake. I mean, the guy is related to all these. I mean, he's basically a royal Davidic bloodline on his mother's side. And again, we're given the same choices. That's all they give us. But, you know, it's only going to be the bloodlines that are in control. And that's one of the things, Jim. I mean, do you see us going back into receivership to England? I mean, has this been part of the sort of Nazi ideology from the beginning?
Well, it probably won't be to England. What we'll do is one of these days there'll be a pounding on their door and there'll be some Chinese soldiers there, but they won't be conquerors or occupation troops. They'll have an eviction notice, a foreclosure notice in their hand, okay, because they will have owned and bought up everything. It's really amazing, and you're right. We have no choice in this election, at least if you listen to the mass media, because you can either vote for Obama, who is backed by Zygmunt Brzezinski and the Trilateral Commission, as you pointed out, or you can vote for McCain, who's backed by Henry Kissinger and the Council on Foreign Relations, which was a predecessor to the Trilateral Commission. So, in other words, you get to vote for a globalist, or you can vote for a globalist. The only person who at least paid lip service and at least has talked about trying to restore the Constitution and the Democratic Republic that this country was founded on has been Ron Paul. And he has just been turned into a non-person by the media. And when I say non-person, those old enough to remember in the old Soviet Union when they had somebody, a leader who fell from favor, then they just quit talking about him. His picture would never appear, and he just became a non-person. And Ron Paul has become a non-person, even though he's the only true choice that is out there on the horizon.
Yeah, I agree with you, Jim. I'm not buying all these other phony choices they tried to give us, even in the Libertarian Bob Barr, Chuck Ball, when they're all tied to the evangelical right. I'm not buying those either.
What's with Bob Barr? He's a Republican, you know, pretty much in the Bush camp, and then all of a sudden he jumps over and he's got a bunch of money and he says, "Oh, I'm going to be a Libertarian," and all of a sudden he's a Libertarian. I mean, how obvious is that?
Yeah. Thank you. I'm glad you said that, because I feel I've been feeling like a lone duck sometimes. I mean, so many people are just ready to jump on another bandwagon. That's the thing about Ron Paul is they've tried to use his campaign to relegate those of us that are about freedom and liberty and the truth to this loser category. Oh, he didn't win, so if you're on board with those ideologies, then you're not a winner. It's very, very slick of those people to do, isn't it?
Oh. Well, they're not stupid. They may be evil and murderous and, you know, corrupt, but they're not stupid. And they have access to the highest paid think tanks and institutions. And I mean, they have some of the top brains in the country working on how to manipulate public opinion. And they're getting it down to science now. You know, if something is about to break in the news media that they can't prevent, then they pull something to take the headlines away. You know, there'd be some school shooting or some bombing over in the Middle East or you know, it'd be something to get our minds off of the real news. But the key thing is that their control over the media, if you don't hear about it, then as far as you know, it didn't happen. And this is the key to controlling the media, is not so much what they say, it's what they don't say, and the fact that they control not all of the news and information, not yet, but they control the distribution of it. And if something happens in Washington or New York or L.A. and you don't hear about it, then as far as you're concerned, it didn't happen, right?
You know, I want to go back to and read what Hitler had said just prior to his death, and because I think this is telling, I think this is a very key statement of how this ideology has continued on. From the sacrifice of our soldiers and from my own unity with them unto death will in any case spring up in the history of Germany the seed of a radiant renaissance of the National Socialist movement, and thus of the realization of a true community of nations. Jim, I mean, was Hitler being able to know that the people that were behind him and the people that were behind funding the ideologies of the Reich, did he know well in advance that those ideologies were going to continue unimpeded into the future?
Oh, absolutely. And in fact, you know, he's the one that really took very concrete steps in trying to create a European Union. He would be very happy today to see that his dreams came true in the form of the European Union. The only thing he did not foresee was they didn't want a prosperous Germany running this European Union. They wanted to run it themselves, so they pulled the plug on Hitler. And I think Hitler, I don't know if he ever came to the realization that they had turned on him, but he certainly understood that even if he passed from the scene, National Socialism was still the wave of the future. And it is. They just don't call it that anymore. Today, over here, we call it neoconservatism, compassionate conservatism. And yet, it's amazing, because, and this is what is truly amazing, is that you've got this wide swath of people in the United States who would readily identify themselves as conservatives, okay? They want to conserve the Constitution. They want to conserve the Bill of Rights. They want to conserve family values. They want to conserve, they want to secure borders. They want a secure border. They want limited government. And these instincts are all good. And yet they have been led down the primrose path by people espousing the Illuminati doctrine of the end justifies the means, and they're told, here's the real conservatives, vote for them. They got their conservative talk show host on that says, oh, these are all the conservatives and they're good. Anybody says anything about it is some sort of filthy liberal. And yet they're being led down the road by these people who are not truly conservative. They are national socialist. And they have been instilling nothing but national socialist programs. One place where they've really stubbed their toe is they want us to be fearful and off balance due to the war on terrorism. We're supposed to be so afraid of these foreign terrorists who are trying to slip into our country and bring in weapons of mass destruction and supposedly, you know, gonna try to destroy the great Satan. And yet, what has been done to secure our borders? Nothing. A lot of talk and a lot of money being thrown around. And first they talked about building a fence. It's going to be 900 miles long, which, you know, does not possibly take care of a 1,700-mile border. So, you know, that's like fencing two-thirds of your property and saying, there, now I'm secure. And then that fence hadn't even been built. No, they decided, well, we're going to do a virtual fence. In other words, we're just going to put a bunch of electronic gadgets out there, and they'll catch everybody. But then they haven't even done that. And the people who do try to enforce the immigration laws are being suppressed and in one case, jailed because they tried to stop a drug dealer. It's just amazing. And people don't seem to get it. They still keep going back and voting for these national socialists because they claim that they are conservatives. And
oh,
yet they're not.
Oh, absolutely. And they'll say, you know, I mean, what, Rush Limbaugh just got a contract for $300 million. I think Hannity just got a new contract for $100 million. We do this
Who's got that kind of money to pay that kind of money for that
Certainly the sponsors don't. He makes more money than his sponsors bring in. What does that tell you?
Exactly. It tells you it's a propaganda front.
But, I mean, that's the thing, Jim, is like these people sit out there and talk up the side of their mouth about the Constitution and about standing up for liberty. They don't even know how to spell Constitution and liberty yet. You know, I mean, how are we supposed to believe that this, you know, national socialism is not the biggest threat to sovereignty when they preach to us that it is what is it ensuring our sovereignty?
Exactly. Well, you know, this is what Nostradamus predicted. He said there will be a time in the future, which is now, when up will be down, black will be white. You know, it's the same thing that was predicted in 1984. You know, slavery is actually freedom. You know, corruption is good. I mean, we're just completely backwards about what we're doing. And most people, because they're so they're under brain entrainment by the television, they can't wake themselves up and realize that what's really going on.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's another thing. The ELF waves, VLF waves, the cell phone towers, HARP. I mean, all of this is being bombarded, standing sodium fluoride in the water and all of it. But, that's the main thing about it is the fact that, this is the kind of stuff. The only thing that differs between what we're seeing now and what Hitler had in Nazi Germany is the technology's a little bit better. Other than that, nothing has really changed. I mean, the fluoride is still there. They're spraying sulfur hexafluoride into the atmosphere, which is a byproduct of aluminum through these chemtrails. And,
if you're not breathing it enough, then they've got probably half the country on Prozac, which is 94% fluoride. But it calms me down. Yeah, it does. It numbs you down, and you don't feel depressed, and you don't feel anxious, but you also don't think.
That's the main thing. I mean, look at back to Rush Limbaugh. I mean, addicted to OxyContin. Who knows?
Speaking of drugs.
Yeah, I'm sure his funding probably comes from Pfizer or something like that. I'm sure he got to get some nice Merck contract. Yeah.
That might be a codicil to his contract. Not only is he going to get $300 million, but he gets free drug prescriptions.
Oh, sure. It's a great advertisement. Hey, take the OxyContin and you'll get a $300 million contract. Sure, sounds like a great deal. We're coming up on a break. We're going to come back. We're going to get more. We're going to talk about Project Paperclip. We're going to talk about Nazi flying discs, possibility of a false flag, alien attack. I want to get Jim's take on that and a whole lot more, folks. You don't want to miss this. We've got a lot more time left with author Jim Mars, author of the new book, The Rise of the Fourth Reich. You can get that at Amazon.com and JimMars.com as well. This is The Global Reality on TruthNet Radio. I'm your host, Josh Reeves. Stay with us. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are back here with you on The Global Reality on the second hour of this Tuesday edition of the broadcast. Joining us today for a special conversation is Jim Mars. His website is jimmars.com, JimMars.com. Also, the book is The Rise of the Fourth Reich, the Secret Societies that Threatened to Take Over America. And this is really the nexus point for who has been in charge, who has been formulating wars, who has held technology, and who is still in charge of it today. And you see that these same people have been in charge for it. And to me, that's what we talked about earlier with Jim, is the fact that, everyone always wants to know, especially in the realm and scope of the research community or talk radio, there's always somebody every single day they want to know, well, what's the solution? How do we fix this? They want the magic bullet, no pun intended there, Jim, but they want the magic bullet to how we fix this. And there is the one that I always go back to, and 15 years of research has always led me back to this, is education. And even those of us who have been in this as long as you have, Jim, I remember you telling me about when you first started telling people something wasn't right about the Kennedy assassination. You would get asked to leave someone's house.
That's true. People resist truth, but there is hope because, as you well know, there are more of us than there are of them. And Josh, you're absolutely right about education. If people listening to this show would first educate themselves, and you can do that by searching the internet, by basically using your head and going out and doing some study. And if you want to save yourself from buying a few hundred books, then just buy my book, The Rise of the Fourth Reich. It's all there along with the sources. Educate yourself and then tell your friends and neighbors and relatives. And if enough people got educated, supposedly at least they're still paying lip service to the fact that we still live in a free country. So assuming we do, then come election time, let's write somebody else in. Let's put somebody's name in there. Ron Paul is somebody who knows what's going on and has leadership ability and has political experience, but maybe it's somebody else. I don't know, but we've got to wean ourselves away from this Republican-Democratic dynamics, which is now clear to any thinking person is a total fraud. They're both controlled by the same wealthy elite. So let's find somebody new. Let's find somebody that's not beholden to these globalists, not on their payroll, not subject to their blackmail, and let's put them in office. In fact, if enough people begin to realize what's really going on and begin to realize that you can actually point the finger at these National Socialists, the acronym of which is Nazis, and begin to realize that Nazis are trying to take control of our country, I think you could get enough people to march on Washington, go in every office and say, hey, you've been downsized. Go home. And maybe there is a way to do something about this, but it's going to have to be with an informed and energized society, and that probably is not going to happen as long as everybody's content to sit home and watch TV.
Oh, that's, you know, and that's it right there. A complete restructuring of the entire system is what it's going to take. As long as we're still participating in their controlled system, we're never going to truly affect change. But in this segment, I really wanted to get into this idea of how the Nazi rocket scientists, Jim, in the secret Nazi space program were working on these flying discs. Now, we know BMW has patents and has actual blueprints for the engines they made on these things. So this is a reality. Let's talk about that, Jim, and get into maybe the mindset behind why they were trying to create these things.
Well, there's absolutely no question that towards the end of the war, the German Nazis were well ahead of everybody in technology. We've known, it's been historic fact, that they had flying saucers on the drawing boards and that they'd actually built some prototypes. The argument has been, but were they ever able to test fly them? And the evidence now seems to be that, yes, they were. And but then they had things even more exotic than that. Actually, the list of things they were working on, they had a night vision scope that they called the Vampire. Night vision, World War II, amazing. They had, their television was a lot more advanced. In 1936, during the Berlin Olympics, hundreds of thousands of Berliners watched the Olympics on closed-circuit television, and it was quite good. Towards the end of the war, they were actually building television-guided bombs or missiles, which were forerunners to our cruise missiles and our Global Hawk remote control technology. They had all this amazing stuff. And, of course, we know about their V-1 rockets and their V-2 rockets. We also know that their Messerschmitt 262 was the world's first operational jet fighter. Their problem was it just came a little too late. They were not enough to turn the course of the war. So, again, here was more technology that they had to offer the United States. In fact, SS General Hans Kammler, who was in charge of their cutting-edge research projects, told Wernher von Braun towards the end of the war that he was going to turn them all over and the V-2 rockets to the Americans in exchange for immunity. And yet, then later he said, "But you're not going to see me again." And sure enough, Kammler disappeared, never to be officially heard from again. And yet we know that it was General Patton's Third Army that swept through Bavaria and scooped up von Braun, the rocket scientist, and the V-2s. So the question is, what happened to Kammler, and what did he have to swap for immunity that was even more advanced than the V-2 rockets? And the answer is probably the Nazi Bell project, Die Glocke, which involved the manipulation of energy at the atomic and subatomic level. The same thing we were talking about earlier with this ancient technology. And as you pointed out, the Germans were as interested in this ancient technology as anybody. They sent expeditions to Tibet, China, to the Middle East, to what is now Iraq, Palestine. They were going everywhere looking for this. And as most people realize who've seen the Indiana Jones movie, you know, where they're after the Ark of the Covenant. But, you know, that's an interesting thing, too. The Ark of the Covenant, we know from descriptions in the Bible that the mercy seat or the lid was 3 3/4 inches, and it was made of pure gold. That means it weighed over 2,700 pounds. And yet we see these drawings and we see these descriptions that these four guys are carrying it around on a pole. How can four people carry 2,700 pounds? They can't. But what we also learn is that inside the Ark of the Covenant was white powder. And now that brings us to the white powder of gold, or the monatomic elements, the orbitally rearranged monatomic elements, which has been shown in laboratories to, when you put it in a weighing pan, the pan weighs less than it did before you put the powder in it, which means that this single atom elements have anti-gravitic properties, which means then, if this is true, that they were not carrying the Ark of the Covenant around, they were simply guiding it, and it was floating off the ground. It's just amazing stuff. But of course, this is all cutting edge science, and we don't get to hear about any of this stuff.
Oh yeah, it's just like you want to get into talking about the Holy Grail as well. I mean, the people think that the Holy Grail is a cup, and you start looking into it, you start finding out that really it was a book of incantations, and that goes back to Solomon, the Hermetic Seal of Solomon, the Goetia, all of this. So I mean, again, if we're talking about the ancient text, Jim, if we're talking about the Bible, all of it, what has been kept from us is the context. It's not so much the truth. Yes, the truth has been held from us, but the context of being able to understand what they're talking about in these ancient.
That's true. That's absolutely true. For example, most people think the Holy Grail was a cup, okay? And yet, if you really study it, it goes back and it turns out that the Holy Grail actually was what is also known as the Philosopher's Stone, all right, which has led a lot of people to think that it was some sort of meteorite or something. But if you'll study even deeper, you find that the ancient alchemists said that the Philosopher's Stone was actually gold heated and reduced down to a fine powder. It was the white powder of gold. The same thing that Moses apparently was making on Mount Horeb, which in the southern Sinai, which is known as the Mount of Moses, and which in 1904 the British archaeologist Sir William Petrie said he had discovered an ancient Egyptian temple on this mountain, and that it had a smelting operation within it. And when they lifted up the flagstones, what did they find? A quantity of white powder. It's this white powder that has anti-gravity properties, may be able to energize energy fields, may be able to create energy fields that can open doorways to perhaps dimensional travel, time travel. Hello. This is the type of things that they're keeping from us.
And that's, and again, I can't help but think that there is some next level. I mean, I think that if you look at what they were creating with this advanced technology there, with these flying discs, I mean, it seems like after Paperclip, there was this necessity to want to bring it to some other level, Jim, that the Nazis didn't quite get into. I mean, let me ask you this. Do you think there's a possibility that the Nazis could have had their hands on back-engineered technology?
Well, that's a good question. I address that in my book, The Rise of the Fourth Reich. For years, I've heard stories about the fact that they had recovered a UFO or a flying disc in North Africa. No, it's in Europe somewhere, maybe in Poland somewhere. But when you try to follow those stories, they never seem to go anywhere. So I am more inclined, and most of the researchers into this area are now inclined to think that, yes, they were in touch with non-human intelligences, but not through back-engineered physical craft, but from the occult work that was begun in the 1900s and continued up to the 20s, because we all know that the Nazis were deeply occulted. They were the creation of the Thule Gesellschaft, or the Thule Society, which was an occult society, and within the Thule Gesellschaft was even more secretive occult societies, such as the Vril or the Germanian Order. And these people were using what we now call remote viewing, which of course was used operationally by the U.S. Army back in the 80s and 70s and 80s and the end of about 95 when they said that they stopped their program. And so it was through this psychic ability, this remote viewing, or perhaps something like channeling that put them in touch with non-human intelligences, who then passed along some of the secrets of this technology. But it's obvious that they had some sort of a source for this just amazing technology that they did come up with.
And, Hermann Oberth, who was Von Braun's mentor, stated on many times, Jim, openly, that our technology did not come from terrestrial sources. We have been helped. I mean, he openly stated that.
Exactly.
And so, I mean, that's what I want to get into now is this, this idea. I mean, we see the files. We see what during Project Paperclip, where it said, Wernher von Braun, ardent Nazi, and they actually went in and penciled in with a little arrow, not an ardent Nazi. trying to write that in.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And then all
well,
you know,
see, that's the same people. Excuse me. That's the same people at work. Before the war, it was Alan Dulles, John Foster Dulles, acting as attorneys for the Schroeder Rockefeller right. Bank, and the Prescott Bush acting as banker for Fitz Tyson, who admitted he was the chief funder of Hitler, and the Harrimans, and John J. McCloy, head of City National Bank, which is now Citicorp. And, you know, these are the same people who had backed Hitler, and then they were still there and put in charge after the war. John J. McCloy became the High Commissioner of Germany. He pardoned thousands of Nazis. Alan Dulles became head of the CIA. They'd bring these Nazis over here, and where their wartime paperwork said ardent Nazi, they would change it to not an ardent Nazi. And they'd whitewash their background. And, of course, people went along with this because, number one, the public didn't know about this. This was all very top secret. Number two, the people who did know about it were either part of the New World Order program or they were snowed into believing that this was necessary because we had to fight the communists, the Russian communists. We were now locked in a cold war with them, and we needed these Nazis in our military-industrial complex to give us the wherewithal to combat communism. And, of course, these poor folks didn't have a clue and didn't realize that the very same people who were bringing these Nazis over and turning America into a national socialist state were the very same people and the same families and the same corporations who had financed the Bolsheviks in Russia after World War One and created communism in Russia. So, see, they just keep us running from pillar to post, you know. And you've already mentioned what Wernher von Braun told his secretary, Carol Rosen, back in the 70s. He said, well, we're in a Cold War now with the communists. He said, but when this doesn't work anymore, it'll be international terrorists, probably from the Middle East, which is where we are now. And he says, when that doesn't work anymore, and it's beginning not to work because people are beginning to figure out that 9/11 was an inside job and that, you know, we really have more to fear from our national leadership than we do from Middle Eastern terrorists. The next step is a threat from space, right?
Absolutely, and that's exactly what I wanted to get into next and move into because, Jim, I mean, what we're starting to see is a lot of this deception. I mean, the deception on the highest scale. I mean, I don't want to open up a can of worms or anything, but, I mean, we could get into a whole conversation about, you know, whether we went to the moon. I believe we did go to the moon. I don't believe what we were shown on TV was that. I believe it was high technology that was used. They just, you know, did this mock-up to hide the fact they were using high technology to get to the moon. But, I mean, look at all the indoctrination. Larry King is showing, is having UFO specials twice a week now. Every day when I do my news gathering for my show, I have almost two UFO stories almost every single day now. We've had mass sightings in San Diego, Stephenville, Texas, all over the place, Jim. I mean, are
right.
they getting ready to test this technology for a pretext to roll out this false flag alien attack, or what we've seen could be a possibility of maybe these actually are craft or a little bit of both? I mean, what are we seeing?
Okay, first off, you need to read my book, Alien Agenda, which was published in 1997. It is the top-selling nonfiction book on UFOs in the world. It's been translated into about a dozen languages. It is an overview of the UFO situation. And what you're going to find out is that many UFO sightings can be explained as misinterpreted natural phenomena or normal aircraft. Some can be seen as secret government test craft. Some could be seen, especially early on, as these Nazi flying saucers that were being tested and flown around. But underneath all of this is there is a core of sightings and experiences, photographs, films, that cannot be explained away as any kind of conventional earthly explanation. So there is, we are not alone in the universe. That is just basically a fact. And anybody who's in denial of that, again, you will never understand what's really going on in the world because you can't understand it because you're rejecting a very important piece of the puzzle. Now, what's happening right now, and you quite adequately pointed up all the recent TV and radio and all the stuff, and of course movies, we are in a conditioning process right now. Heretofore, the official government line has been UFOs don't exist. There's nothing out there, folks. And going back to the national polls of the 1950s, that pretty well was echoed by the response of the public in the United States. In the 50s, virtually no one believed that there was any life outside the Earth. But thanks to a conditioning process that we've all gone through with Star Trek, Star Wars, little alien dolls, all kinds of aliens in commercials and everything else, that has been totally turned around. Now, the vast majority of people, more than 80-85% of the population, now believes that there is life outside the Earth. So now, what they're having to do is go through and condition us to hear truthful and meaningful reports on the news media about UFOs, because up until just the last few years, number one, such reports didn't make it on the air, or if they did, then it was done with a snicker and a roll of the eyes to act like, well, there's really nothing to this, just some idiot out in the sticks who claims he saw something. But now, see, we're being conditioned to the idea that it's very real and that we need to be aware that we are not alone in the universe. Now, the danger here is that while this is, I feel, undoubtedly true, it will be forming the foundation for people to be told that now there is a threat from space, and we have to put all our energy into supporting the military-industrial complex so they can build space-based weapons, Star Wars program, to protect us from the aliens. And I'm here to tell you, just as Wernher von Braun told his secretary, it's all hogwash. It's not true. And the reason I can say that is because having written Alien Agenda and having deeply investigated the UFO issue is nothing new. There have been reports going back into man's prehistory. The Bible has its own reports. Okay? Ezekiel and the fiery wheel. What else do you want? It flew through the air. A wheel in the air glowing? What else do you want? UFO. All the way back to the ancient Romans, the ancient Egyptians, the Chinese with their flying dragons, the Hindu writings, the Vedas, which are among the oldest writings in human history, and they talk about the Vamanas, the flying machines of their gods that could blow up a whole city with one fiery weapon. I mean, we are being told about the truth of our antecedents, but the powers that be don't want us to know this because it would empower us and we would begin to understand what's truly going on. So we're not supposed to know any of this stuff. We're supposed to think that we just came down from the trees and somehow became hunter-gatherers and somehow learned to grow crops and then finally evolved from city-states into cities and then nations and then empires. And it's just been one slow evolutionary climb, and that we are the apex of evolution.
People don't have to believe you, Jim. They don't have to believe me. People can go pull up the Department of Defense, DOD.gov. You can go pull up their fiscal year 2008-2009 spending for space-based weapons and go find out for yourself that, lo and behold, in 2008 and 2009, just when we're seeing the most mass amounts of sightings, guess when they're spending the most on space-based weapons? 2008-2009. People don't have to listen to us, Jim. It's all there.
It's all there for anybody who wants to pay attention to it. In fact, I'm glad to hear you say what you say, Josh, because I'm very much the same way. I don't expect nor ask anybody to believe anything I say, okay? I'll leave that to the politicians and the TV evangelists, you know. I say this, believe this, you know. I just say study it for yourself. Look at the facts, and you will come, I think, to the same understanding that I have and that you have, Josh.
Absolutely. Third hour is coming up. We're going to take a break, come back. We're going to talk more with Jim about the new book. We're going to talk more. I want to get in more of this information about what we may see coming, the secret NASA space program, and where we're at today as far as the new Reich and the Fourth Reich in America. Jim Marsh, the book is The Rise of the Fourth Reich, and you can get that at Amazon.com and other fine booksellers. Third hour is around the corner. We may open up the phone lines at some point, take some calls. I don't know. We'll have to see. This is the Global Reality on the TruthNet Radio Network. Stay with us. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we're back here in the third hour of the Global Reality on this Tuesday edition of the broadcast right here on the TruthNet Radio Network. I'm your host, Josh Reeves. Joining us today is Jim Marsh. He's the author of the new book, The Rise of the Fourth Reich, The Secret Societies That Threaten to Take Over America. This book is now available. It's available to many fine resellers, Amazon.com, jimmars.com. And I got to tell you, you guys that have been listening to my show, and a lot of you have been listening to this show almost the entire time we've been doing it. I've almost been on a whole year now. And one of the things that we've been talking about heavily on the show are the ancient texts, the ancient knowledge, Sumer, the ancient technology, and this idea that that what we're seeing in this day and age is an extension of that. And it's amazing. Let me tell you something, folks. He goes into a lot of the hidden knowledge, the hidden technology stuff, just like he did in Rule by Secrecy. I think this is his best book since Rule by Secrecy, to be honest with you, and because he goes into a lot of the various stuff. I mean, this isn't just about the Fourth Reich, folks. This isn't just about new Nazis. He goes into all the aspects, and this is something that, again, we have to be able to decode all the information. And you know what's been interesting to me is I remember Jim. I remember back in Rule by Secrecy, Jim had just had a little passage where he mentioned the mysterious rock wall formation there in Rockwall, Texas. And of course, I'm working with some others on a documentary of that right now. And what we've been finding is these geopolymers and these this crystalline structure where when you place something heavy on top of the wall, it creates this electrical force. And then we have pre-flood ash down at the bottom of it, going back to what Jim was talking about with the Vedas and these nuclear fires that wiped the earth to ash. And just so happens they found 17-foot-tall skeletons and pre-flood ash outside of this wall in Rockwall, Texas, and no one wants to touch it. I mean, there are things, Jim, that are being uncovered, new civilizations in Turkey that predate Sumer. I mean, what do you see coming? Do you think there are more ancient finds that are going to be found that are going to be maybe used for technological advancements? I mean, what do you see coming in the future, Jim?
Well, yes, I think we're going to see lots of new revelations coming out, new discoveries, thanks to modern technology. We have ground-penetrating radar, and we have the ability to explore down to the ocean depths where they're finding ancient cities, you know, buried under thousands of feet of water. We have the ability to truly know the history of this planet and where we came from, which ought to give us some reliable guide as to where we're going. But you have people who do not want us to know these things. This is why, for example, in the early 20s, they found Egyptian artifacts in the Grand Canyon. And yet the government came in, built huge cranes, lifted them all out, carted everything off, then scrubbed the files of any of this information, and now, except for a few old newspaper articles, you can't find out anything about it. Same thing's happening with the rock wall in Dallas. Funding is suddenly cut off because the people who have the money have the clout. We are, as they say, operating in this country under the golden rule. Whoever has the goal makes the rules. And one of the rules is they do not want us to know our in the world and what we could be doing. Let's face it, Josh, the biggest proof of conspiracy and the biggest conspiracy going on in the world today is that while we're having this discussion and while your audience is listening, we all know in the back of our mind that there are literally thousands, perhaps millions, of children on this planet literally starving to death. Now, why in the world is that? I don't want that. You don't want that. I don't think anybody listening wants that. You know, and yet at the same time, we kind of know that we have technology today that we can produce enough food, clean water, clothing, housing, to take care of every single person in this world. So why should these children be starving? Well, once you get past the facile explanations of, well, transportation and political governments and blah, 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 you know, what it really boils down to is these children are starving because somewhere somebody wants it that way. If nobody wanted it that way, it wouldn't be that way. So what we have to do is get the conscious level of the masses, of the public, to the point where everybody understands that everything doesn't have to be the way that it is. There shouldn't be children starving in the world. And that doesn't mean we have to turn to some socialistic, communistic system and, you know, strip away from the haves and give to the have-nots. It simply means that we need to start thinking of new ways to handle things. I was talking with people who belong to my local church here, and they know in our local community who the people are who truly need help. They need food. They need somebody to take care of them. They need clothing. They are truly destitute. They are truly have some really hard times to deal with. And my particular church has a food bank. We gather up food, and once a week people can come in, and we know who these people are. We know who deserves it and who does not, and we simply give the food to the people who need it. Now, this can be done. This can be done all over the world. That's not communistic. That's just charitable. That's helping the people who need help. But when you try to set up a monolithic social system of welfare where somebody in Washington decides who in California or Texas or Missouri deserves to get the welfare, then you are creating a system that's just ripe for central control and for corruption. So, you know, there's just ways of doing things, and we need to start thinking in terms of doing things in different ways. But, of course, that's difficult to do when you have your TV on 24/7 and you're given this slightly skewed vision of how the world is and how it operates, right?
Well, that's absolutely right. I mean, how do people don't even know, Jim, what they're supposed to be, knowing is the truth. The fact of the matter is, they don't even have any inkling of an iota they've been lied to. So how can anybody possibly know there's something they need to wake up to when they don't even know they're asleep? Exactly.
And that's the beauty of the National Socialist propaganda machine in this country. In the old Soviet Union, everybody in Russia knew that the government controlled the news outlets. So when they got the news, they took it with a grain of salt, and they kind of read between the lines to try to figure out what the truth was, because they knew the government was not telling them the absolute truth. But in modern America, the National Socialists have gotten pretty smart. They constantly bombard us with news you can trust, all the news there is, all the news that fits. Oh, it's right here. First Amendment. We defend the First Amendment. And so it's really hard to break out of the propaganda when you don't realize that you're being propagandized. It's really amazing. Most people in the United States think they really have a free and wide-ranging media, and therefore they don't even question the propaganda that they're spoon-fed.
Oh, yeah, the technology makes it look good. And again, as long as it looks good, it doesn't matter. It's all about appearances with these people. That's the same thing with these secret societies or these people in charge. It's all about appearances. As long as the appearances are kept up, they can get away with whatever they're doing. I mean, they just, they hold a puppet over here on the right hand and go, hey, look over here, and then the left hand's doing all the dirty work, and people never know the difference.
Left hand's picking your pocket. That's right. And this is exactly what I've been talking about. These National Socialists adhere to the Illuminati methodology of the end justifies the means. And so to achieve their ends, they will tell you anything. They will lie. They will cheat. They will steal. They'll pretend to be liberal. They'll pretend to be conservative. They'll pretend to be anything. Okay? And you've got to see past that. And how do we see past that? It's like the old line about how can you tell if a politician's lying to you? Well, it's simple. His lips are moving. Okay? Because every politician lies to you. They have to. If somebody like Ron Paul comes along and tries to tell you the truth, number one, most people don't want to hear it, and they turn him off. And number two, they ignore him, and they vilify him because they don't want somebody to tell the truth. So to be elected to office, you have to lie. You just have to. That's the only way you can get into office. So right away, we're electing nothing but liars. Well, there starts a big part of the problem right there. So how do you find out which ones are the ones that you want to keep? By watching what they do, okay? That's like, I'm concerned about John McCain because by his own admission, for 5.5 years, he was in the hands of communist mind control experts. We know this because of documents that are now available out of the old Soviet Union. They sent Russian mind control experts to Hanoi specifically to work on John McCain. Now, a McCain supporter might say, well, yeah, but he was a tough warrior. He can withstand that. And maybe so. But let's look at his voting record. He has voted for every aid package to Vietnam, and yet he's voted against, dragged his feet, and even vilified the families trying to look into MIAs and missing POWs. What does that tell you? And then, as I understand, that the only memorial to American prisoners in Hanoi is a statue of John McCain, who was a admiral's son and a prime target for mind control. Now, am I the only one concerned about a Manchurian candidate getting his hands on the nuclear trigger? What's wrong with people?
Oh, they just don't care. I mean, old Songbird is up there singing along, and everybody's just following him like the Pied Piper. But, you know, I mean, this is part and parcel of where we're at, Jim. And I want to kind of shift gears here for a minute just to make sure we get everything in about the book today. I want to get into Kennedy. I want to get into the connection with the black op that happened there. George de Mornshield, the connection as Oswald Handler, his connection to the Nazis. Tell everybody about the whole connection to the Nazis and the Kennedy assassination, Jim.
Well, you know, when I set off to write The Rise of the Fourth Reich, I knew that I would be dealing with the National Socialist infiltration and attempted takeover of the United States. I never thought that I would actually be dealing with the Kennedy assassination. And yet, as I went along, having dealt with the Kennedy assassination for so many years, it suddenly dawned on me that there's just too much there to ignore it. So, you know, and you mentioned George de Mornshield. Well, George de Mornshield was the last known close personal friend of Lee Harvey Oswald, okay? And the key thing is that I spent a lot of time with his wife, and she told me that George initially was a Nazi agent. He was arrested by the FBI during World War II for being a Nazi agent.
Come on.
Hello?
Really?
Yeah.
Come on. Serious.
Serious. And so then, of course, and then he was rolled into the CIA and became a CIA operative, and that's what he worked for. His closest friend was J. Walter Moore, who was the domestic sessions chief in Dallas, Texas, at the time of the Kennedy assassination, and officed, I think, in the same building, and was certainly good friends with George de Mornshield, the last known close personal friend of Lee Harvey Oswald, the accused assassin. So we have that tie. We have the tie that the Paynes, where Marine Oswald was living at the time of the assassination, Michael Payne and Ruth Payne. Michael Payne worked for Bell Helicopter and was worked in conjunction with General Walter Dornberger, who was by then a vice president of Bell Helicopter there in Fort Worth, and who had been a Nazi Luftwaffe general in charge of the concentration camp Dora that provided slave labor for the Peenemünde V-2 and V-1 rocket sites. So, wow, all of a sudden we see more Nazis. And then we've got the whole thing about the fact that when Lee Harvey Oswald was in New Orleans, he told Adrian Alba, a fellow who ran a garage there that housed government cars, FBI and Secret Service and CIA, and that he expected to go to work for NASA, National Space and Aeronautics Administration. Now, why Oswald, who had, according to the cover story, was defected to Russia, was pro-communist, was anti-American, why in the world would he expect to go to work for NASA? Well, we find out that in the Jim Garrison investigation into the conspiracy that killed President Kennedy, he wanted to subpoena four or five employees of the Riley Coffee Company who had worked with Oswald to show that he was actually working for the United States government and was an undercover agent posing as a pro-communist. And yet he was never able to get these four or five people to come testify because suddenly they were all went to work for a NASA facility outside New Orleans, and NASA said that they couldn't come testify on the basis of national security. So we just see the footprints of the Nazis all the way through the Kennedy assassination, right up to the fact that John J. McCloy and Alan Dulles, two of the most prominent supporters of Hitler and the Nazis, who then were in power in the 50s to bring the Nazis over here, whitewash their records, and to propagate National Socialism in the American system, sat on the Warren Commission and determined that Lee Harvey Oswald was the sole assassin of President Kennedy. Wow. I mean, what more do you want?
Oh, yeah. And, of course, all involved were all Knights of Malta. I mean, you had the Dulles brothers were Knights of Malta. Clay Shaw was Knights of Malta. I mean, on and on and on. I mean, look, we know who was involved. We know what the signature was. And the fact of the matter is we are just now finding out about some of this stuff, Jim, and none of these people have ever gone out of power. And you know, what are we going to see come down the road? I mean, are the black operations that these people pull off from the Kennedy assassination, 9/11, I mean, are these done? What is the next level of this? Is it going to be a nuke? Is it going to be a false flag alien attack? I mean, what are these people cooking up next to get this National Socialism achieved on a grand scale?
Well, to answer your question, Josh, anything that would work for them, okay? I'm sure that since there's like at least two dozen missing suitcase nukes from the old Soviet Union, there's probably several of them over in this country right now, which means anytime they want to, they could trigger a nuclear attack on some American city, Kansas City, Houston, Des Moines, who knows. But the thing that has kept them from doing that is so far they've been able to keep the lid on all of their skullduggery because of their control over the media. But if they ever lose that grip, and if it looks like war crime trials are coming up, or that they're going to be thrown out of power in Washington, D.C., then you better believe they'd go ahead and trigger another false flag attack just to institute martial law and to panic the population and to keep their power base secure. The main reason that they are holding off doing that is because if there was a terrorist strike, a nuclear strike on an American city, it would so disrupt this country. And as we already know, our economy's tottering at the moment, and it might be enough to push it over the edge, cause the whole U.S. economy to collapse. If that was to happen, it would pretty well collapse the Western economy. And they don't really want, they're going to hold that off as long as they can, because they're going to soak every dollar of profit out of the economy that they can. That's why even the old farmers knew that you had to let the land lay fallow for a season or so that it would give back twice the abundance. We all know that you have to conserve your resources, and you have to put a little something back in. Even the old corporate trust barons of the 1800s, they knew that you had to give a little back to get more back, and they also felt gratitude for the fact that their city or their state had given them the opportunity to accumulate great wealth, and so they would put it back in the form of backing the fine arts and the museums or whatever. You don't see that today. It's all take and no give. And so to me, it's quite clear that these people, these globalists, this wealthy elite, they realize that it's not going to be here very much longer, and so they're going to try to take all they can while they can.
And that's, you know, exactly. The fact of the matter is it's a collapse by design. They have to collapse this country and collapse our sovereignty to be able to get their full-blown New World Order in place. I wanted to get your take, Jim. What were the connections, and if there are any, and definitely who was pulling the strings on LBJ as far as this Reich was concerned?
Well, that's quite simple. Go back and study the news clippings, and you'll find that Lyndon Johnson was under the total control of his 16 wise men, okay, that included Abel Harriman, Dean Rusk, I could go on and on. The point is, every single one of these men were ranking members of the Council on Foreign Relations. And the Council on Foreign Relations, right after World War II, had issued some position papers stating that the United States needed to gain control over the mineral resources of Southeast Asia, which at that time was French Indochina. But in 1954, with the fall of Dien Bien Phu, the French pulled out, and it left Vietnam open, so America moved in. And they immediately divided the country in half and gave the old bandit chief, Ho Chi Minh, who had been our agent during World War II and helped throw out the Japanese from Indochina, gave him the rocky, barren, non-productive north of the country, while they kept control over the south of the country, South Vietnam, and that's what led to the Vietnam War.
And in the same, again, look at these no bid contracts. You and I had a conversation about this once last year when you came down a little, showing a loose change we had. We talked about how Harrimans and Kellogg, Brown, and Root, and what they were doing in Vietnam were the same thing that Halliburton is doing now. And we see all these reports coming out about, there was one last week we had about people getting electrocuted due to faulty engineering and whatnot. I mean, these same people are setting up the engine for global domination today.
Yeah, it's all the same bunch, because KB&R, Kellogg, Brown, and Root, is now a subsidiary of Halliburton. Again, it's all being consolidated. They change the name sometimes, but the people, the families, the groups, the corporations, it's all the same. And everything's going to continue to be the same until we wise up and are as free and independent American citizens. And one way we can do that, by the way, and this is one of the upsides of corporatism or fascism, the blending of corporate and state power, is that the corporations generally operate on one key principle, and that is to keep the profit line up, which gives us actually some measure of control over them. For example, right now everybody is really concerned about the price of gasoline. It seems just going up and up, although it's finally beginning to drop back a little bit in recent days, but it's still way too high. Well, there's certain things we could do. Number one, we could demand that the federal government drop the federal tax on gasoline. That would cut gasoline prices in half. In half! Okay, but of course they're not going to do that, because then that might impact their paycheck. So what else can we do? Well, then what we do is we make our impact feel on the corporations. We pick one corporation, let's say Exxon, and we decide that for one, and word goes out, everybody agrees that for 1 month, you can buy all the gasoline you want, just not from Exxon. Do not buy Exxon. Well, 1 month of no sales, and their sales start dropping, and their profit line starts getting impacted, what's Exxon going to do? They're going to lower their price. Well, then everybody can run and buy Exxon, and then all the other guys are going saying, now we've lost our business, so they'll lower their price. That's, in that way, we might could actually exert some impact and some control over these corporations.
Yeah, and it's just easier for them to devalue the currency, Jim, and bring us down to third world status than it is to do that. I mean, these, you know, their profit margins are the bottom line. We're coming up on a break, and we're coming into the final segment of the show, final 30 minutes of the show, and I want to get into really who is in control now of this Fourth Reich and their control over religion. Those of you that know about me and the new film I'm making know that those are two key things that I'm very interested in. So we'll talk about that. We'll finish up. We're talking with Jim Mars about the rise of the Fourth Reich, the takeover of the secret societies that are to take over America, right here on the Global Reality on the TruthNet Radio Network. Stay with us. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we're back here with you on the Global Reality final half hour of the broadcast today with our guest, Jim Mars. His new book is The Rise of the Fourth Reich, the Secret Societies that Threaten to Take Over America. That is available at Amazon.com and other fine retailers. I tell you what, most of the time what we're trying to get people to get into these days, because nobody reads anymore, is videos and websites and whatnot. But I got to tell you what. Again, if you don't read one book this year, you have to get. I mean, this book has to be read by our audience, because I mean, this is everything we've been talking about for the past 8 months, and Jim Mars is bringing you a concise, wrapped up form. And one of the things that we've talked about before with Jim is you know, that's anything you can do to take action is worth it. I mean, even if you get this book and you have something tangible and concrete, it's not like you listen to my show for 8 months and you hear me spout all this information and you don't know where to go get it all. Well, I mean, you can go get Rise of the Fourth Reich and you have a reference now. You can go take this and you can show people who's been in charge, who has went and got this ancient technology, these ancient texts from Sumeria, Assyria, Babylon, the ancient mystery schools, and how they tie into the ideologies of control today. It's here in a concise form for you now, ladies and gentlemen. You don't have an excuse anymore. I'm sorry. When you email me and ask me where you can get this information from, I'm going to refer you to this book because, it really is all there. But, Jim, you know, going forward now, what are the connections between what we saw post-World War II to now as far as the people that are running the mechanisms of the new Reich in this day and age?
Well, again, it's the same people and their proteges and their offspring. Prescott Bush, a powerful senator from Connecticut, who was instrumental in creating the CIA, which then was quickly headed by Alan Dulles, who had been one of the supporters of Hitler. And then Prescott Bush himself was actually prosecuted in late 1942 under the Trading with the Enemies Act for being nothing but a financial frontman for Hitler and the Nazis. And, of course, then his son goes on, George Herbert Walker Bush. He was one of the few people who was not purged from the Republican National Committee by Richard Nixon, who was put into office with Nazi money. And he said, keep Bush, because he's a team player. He'll do it. And between Bush and Nixon, they began to fill the Republican Party with these ethnic committees, Ukrainians for Bush, Lithuanians for Bush, and that were made up of all these ex-Nazis and pro-Nazis from Eastern Europe. And this is how they began to infiltrate and turn the Republican Party, which once had stood for true conservatism, to neoconservatism, which is nothing more than national socialism. And again, they adhere to the Illuminati motto, the end justifies the means. So they will say, we're conservative, we're liberal, we're pro-choice, we're anti-choice, we're pro-life, we're anti-life. You know, they'll say anything. They will say anything to achieve their ends. And this is what has got us into this debacle that we find ourselves in today. The war on terror, the war on drugs. You know, it's a war on drugs. If your kid goes out and tries to smoke some pot, he's arrested, gets a police record, probably gets some jail time, and he's a criminal. But if you go and get Prozac, which is 94% fluoride, and you numb yourself down, and you go through the day totally on drugs, hey, that's okay because that's big farm, you know, and that's all right. I was flabbergasted some years ago when watching TV with my daughters, and they come on and they say, here's a public service message that says, just say no to drugs. And then it's immediately followed by a drug ad that shows a beautiful lady, you know, wandering through the flowers, and it says, you know, want a date? Don't feel good? Take a pill. Look at the mixed messages that we're sending to our young people. It's just truly incredible, and it all has to do with the corporate control of America and the corporate control over the government of the United States, and that blending of corporate and state power is the very dictionary definition of fascism. And let me tell you, here's how it works. It's this simple. There are people who are members, the Green Party, for example, people who are into environmentalism, people who are into vegetarianism. All this is just fine. That's wonderful stuff. But let's stop and remember that Hitler was a vegetarian. Hitler was against hunting. Hitler was anti-gun. Hitler was anti-alcohol. Hitler was anti-smoking. Hitler built the modern freeway systems in Europe and was the first to initiate pollution controls in Europe. He was a New Age person, and their dream come true. But he enforced that through government decree. You can't do this, you can't do that, and you must do this, and you must do that. Wanting to support environmentalism or a good, clean lifestyle or good health care is wonderful. But when you start dictating it through the state, that's fascism. And people need to understand that distinction. I'm sure you do, Josh.
Oh, yeah, this whole, cult of global warming, as I call it now, with Al Gore is no different than that, Jim. I mean, it's the exact same thing.
Exactly. And I'll give you another example. To me, it's so simple, and yet nobody seems to grasp it. Let's go to the no smoking thing. You know, I've lived a whole lifetime. When I was young, Lucille Ball and Humphrey Bogart were on the top.
I think we may have lost Jim there, Mike. We'll have to get reconnected to him. But, yeah, exactly. I do know what Jim, are you with us? Jim, are you with us? I think we lost Jim, Mike. Maybe we'll try to reconnect to him. But, yeah, I know. He's coming in and out. Mike, go ahead and try to reconnect Jim. Hang up, we'll reconnect and get him back on here because it's just stuttering and hammering. Now, it sounds like he's there. Yeah. Go ahead and reconnect to Jim there. He's stuttering coming out. We're going to have to get reconnected. But I want to say what Jim's saying. He's very much on time with, yeah, I mean, back in the day, you saw Lucille Ball, you saw these people smoking on television and like it was no thing. And now, you can't even smoke out in front. Where I live, it's 30 feet out in front of a grocery store, 30 feet out in front of an electronics store or something. You can't even smoke anywhere. And again, it's not these ideologies that they're doing this for the best interest of the people or they're doing this for the best interest of the health of the public. They're doing this to bring down tyranny and socialism onto the public. That's what it's all about. But again, we're trying to get back connected to Jim Mars. I guess he probably thinks he's still talking, doesn't know that we got disconnected. But we'll try to get him back for you. But I mean, that's what we're really getting into here is this fact that every person innately knows the difference between right and wrong. We've talked about that here on the show many times. We know, how to be healthy and what you need to do to live a good life. You don't need a tyrannical government coming in and dictate that to you through laws or anything else, through the police state, through the indoctrination, as I was mentioning.
Hello.
the cult of global warming. Okay, Jim, we got you back with us. We had a little technical snafu there, but right at the end, what you were talking about was how when back in the day, you used to see Lucille Ball and everybody else smoking right on TV, and now it's considered faux pas.
Right, but the main thing is that we came to a better understanding that smoking is bad for you, and that's good, okay? And then we have all these anti-smoking campaigns. That's good. But when it gets to the point of where they pass a law and says, you cannot smoke here or here or here, that's fascist. What am I talking about? How does it work? Well, it works this way. It's really interesting. It's freedom. What a concept. If you own a restaurant or a bar and the bulk of your customers want to come and smoke, what do people do that goes to bars anyway? They want to go and smoke and drink. And if that you own one and most of your customers say, we want to be able to come and smoke and drink, then you allow smoking and drinking in your bar. And people that don't want to be exposed to the cigarette smoke, they can go somewhere else. And if you own a restaurant and your customers come to you and say, we really don't want to put up with cigarette smoking, then it should be up to you to post a no smoking sign because it's your restaurant. It's called freedom. What a concept. But no, the state steps in and says every restaurant, every bar in the city, there can be no smoking. That's fascist. And we shouldn't be putting up with it.
No, and that's what we have here in Dallas, Texas. I mean, you can't smoke in a bar, in a restaurant in Dallas. You can't smoke within 30 feet of some stores and electronic stores or anything else. I mean, they don't even like you smoking anywhere, Jim. And the fact of the matter is, the people that are in control, the people that are making these laws, are the people that run the damn tobacco companies.
Exactly. Exactly. And notice how the price of tobacco has skyrocketed over the years. I gave up smoking cigarettes in the late 60s, not because of any concern for health, but because I felt like I was spending too much money on the habit, and that's when cigarettes were 25 cents a pack. So look what they're costing today.
Oh, you like a good cigar every now and again, though, Jim. I do know that.
Well, that's true. That's a little bit different deal. Oh, well. I'm like everybody else in this hypocritical society. Do what I say, don't do what I do.
That's right. As I'm outside talking to you, lighting one up, and Jim saying, you know, Josh, you ought to quit smoking. As Jim started lighting on a cigar, I love it. Yeah, that's exactly how we do it, man. I mean, you know, we don't need anyone dictating to us, Jim, what is right and what is wrong. Just like we don't need a priest class, this modern day priest class that runs, the churches. Or runs the Vatican, or runs whatever else you want to say. I mean, these ancient mystery school religions. A lot of people don't know, Jim, that what used to be the government was the priest class. The people that had the hidden knowledge were the ones that were making the laws and making the rules. This is just transmogrified into this thing where now it's government, but it is the modern day priest class that's keeping the secrets from us and using it as a form of enslavement.
Well, and that's absolutely correct, and that's because up until the Age of Enlightenment, the church ran everything. That's why they call it the Catholic Church. Catholic means the universal church. It was just universal. They determined who would be king and who would not, and what the going rate of the money was. They ran everything. And then with the Protestant Reformation and the Age of Enlightenment, people finally began to wise up, and they began to kind of, the power of the church began to wane. So the very same people who'd been running the church, these people with the ancient knowledge, they just turned to government, and they begin to run everybody through government. And people have been trying to avoid that for centuries, ever since the earliest beginnings of humankind in the Fertile Crescent, there between the Tigris and Euphrates rivers in what is now Iraq, the one place in the world where we can't go. It was one Western migration. People moved down south to Palestine, into Egypt, up to Rome, and then up north into the Caucasus region, and into Eastern Europe, and then to Western Europe, and then the British Isles. And then they came and colonized the east coast of America, and then during the 19th century, they spread all the way across America, moving westward. Why did everybody keep moving? Why was everybody moving westward all those centuries? Well, historians make no secret about it. They were trying to escape religious and political tyranny, just like we have. But the problem today is that we filled up America coast to coast. Every place else is pretty well filled up. There's no place left to run to. We're going to have to turn, and we're going to have to fight against these controllers, these people who want to manipulate and to tyrannize the human race.
And you know, I mean, what I always go back to, and I kind of started on this years ago, and then, when I first started getting into this information by reading Crossfire, and then that Crossfire led me to research in black operations, and then got me into the Bilderberg Group and secret societies, led me down all these other paths. And one of the core things, Jim, that was always there was this ideology of this hidden knowledge, you know, whether it be Albert Pike's Morals and Dogma or any of these texts. You know, they don't give you any indication as to whether or not they're supposed to be used for good or they're supposed to be used for evil. They simply are, in whatever application, of the hands of the person they fall into. I mean, do you believe, like I believe, Jim, that part of ever formulating a grand solution to fighting these manipulators on a grand scale would be getting our hands on this sacred information they've kept from us and giving it to free humanity?
Oh yes, absolutely, and that's why that there is such a undercover struggle going on, trying to bring new technology to the public. It's really amazing. You know, there's stuff on the internet now about people who are making cars run on water. They're making a car in India now that just runs on compressed air. It can go about 150 miles and can get up to 68 miles an hour running on compressed air. Of course, we had electric cars back in the 20s, and then all of a sudden they disappeared. We know about Tesla technology that was suppressed. Well, Rudolf Diesel, when he invented the diesel engine, invented an engine that was going to run on organic matter and vegetables and corn or whatever, okay? And then, he slipped and fell overboard crossing the English Channel, and the next thing you know, and now, even till today, the diesel engines run on compressed gas made from petroleum. So, see, we're being tyrannized by these these same people using these monopolies that they have control over, monopolies of petroleum, monopolies over telecommunications, monopolies in medicine and pharmaceuticals. It's amazing. And if we're truly going to be free, we should have freedom of choice in the marketplace. And to do that, there should be choice of technologies. Why should I be dependent on ever-increasing prices of gasoline when I could be running a car on water vapor? It's all there. This is not conspiracy theory. This is not some science fiction. This is all very real, and it's just there. But it's being kept from us, and nobody knows about it, and nobody's demanding it because the mass media is under control. And they don't know that it is available to them. This is why I think that the first step is to create lines of communication that are not under the control of these five corporations, so that we can actually share information with people, not only about politics and lifestyles and pharmaceuticals, but about energy technology, transportation technology. It's all happening, but right now I'm driving one of those electric gasoline hybrids, and it's great, and I'm getting 44, 45 miles a gallon. And I don't see any reason why, especially if you live in a town, you wouldn't drive one that was just totally electric, just running those little electric motors. And every time you drive along, you're building up juice for them. That could all work, but we still don't have them, and we probably won't have them for another 20 years because they, the people in control, want to stay in control, and they're going to maintain their control over the technologies until they can figure out how to get a lock on the new technology. That's why we hear talk of fuel cells. Well, yeah, one of these days we will have fuel cells that will power our cars, but only after they figure out how to make one in such a way that nobody can duplicate it and only they can sell you the ingredients for the fuel cell. So it's just, we've just got to start doing things in different ways.
That, yeah, and being able to have a platform in wanting to do it, but is being able to find a way that we can actually have some way to get these up. But they're not going to let us have it because they control the manufacturing, they control all the base, they control everything else. But the fact of the matter is, just like as we were talking about earlier about this phony and flawed political system and this controlled political system, it's a tearing down of the old system and bringing in a new. And, I mean, you know, this is something, Jim, that I think that has gone on for centuries. I mean, we've talked about the ancient Sumer civilization. I mean, you can go back and read from the Library of Congress about Sumer, and they openly talk about how they had a powerful elite that was attempting to enslave the minority, enslave the people, and the people rising up against us. I mean, Jim, do you see us in the time period that we are right now? Do you see us in another one of those time periods that has historically happened through history where the people are rising up and are starting to finally figure out that there is someone that wants to enslave them?
Yes, I think so. In fact, that's actually a lot of people who are into the issues that we've been discussing. They get very depressed, and they get very cynical and very negative, and they go, oh, man, you know, it's the writing's on the wall, the economy's going to collapse, you know, blah, blah, blah. Actually, we're living in quite an exciting period right now, and we have, and I guarantee you, over the next 4 years, and of course, we won't get into the whole 2012 thing, but over the next 4 years, we're going to see some dramatic and significant changes taking place. I, for one, think that when 2013 comes around, you and I and all of us listening, we're all going to still be here. But I think we will agree that we're not living in the same world that we were living in 2008. Just like now in 2008, we can all agree we're not living in the same world we were living in 2001 prior to 9/11. So there is actually a very exciting time, but it's also a time that calls for involvement. You can't just sit and watch TV and hope that somebody else is going to take care of it, because that's what we've said for years, and unfortunately, they are taking care of it. But they are not the people that you want taking care of it. They are the National Socialists that are now trying to corral and tyrannize the entire world, and it's time for all of the caring and concerned and thinking people to start figuring out, what can I do to do my part? And I would say for the most part, for most of us, it falls into education. You have to talk to the people you work with. You have to talk to your family. You have to talk to people at your churches, your synagogues, wherever. You have to start speaking out. You have to stand up in support of freedom and individual liberty, the Constitution of the United States, the Bill of Rights, apply it equally across the board to everyone, and again, in other words, become part of the solution instead of being part of the problem.
Well, and Jim, you know, you keyed in on a few very, very important things right there. There is a line in the sand. I think we're going to see more of a line in the sand drawn between this type of information, fear-mongering an individual and getting them scared to death in the fetal position in the corner, and actually being, okay, empowered by this information. I'm not scared by this information, Jim. I'm empowered by it because I know who I'm up against. The cards are on the table. I know who it is I have to defeat. And so it really is a lot more empowering than it is when you're just kind of going through your life, wondering why bad things happen to you all the time and you don't know what's going on. I mean, once you find out who you're up against, that gives you the ability, okay, now I need to go get some more people on board with this so maybe we have a chance at fighting these people. And I agree with you wholeheartedly on the assessment about 2012. What we're seeing is we're moving in out of the old age and into the new age. I mean, just like Zbigniew Brzezinski in 1969 in his book Between Two Ages, The Rise of the Technotronic Era, talked about manipulating humans in a chemical way and having a computer by the end of the 20th century and into the 21st century, having a worldwide computer system to be able to track and trace everywhere everyone went, and any sort of law enforcement individual would have access to that information. And what are we seeing? We're moving into a new age where the lies that have been put down upon the human populations are no longer going to begin to stay in a place, but it's up to us what we do with that information.
Exactly. That's exactly correct, and it's going to be up to us. You can't leave it up to the politicians who have to lie just to get in office. You can't leave it up to the religious leaders who all have their own little corner of religion staked out and are going to defend it to the death. You have to start thinking for yourself, and you have to ally yourself with people who also are thinking for themselves. And you have to, most importantly, you have to operate from the standpoint of truth. Because if you're not operating from the standpoint of truth, the truth of what's happening in this country, the truth of what's happening in the world, the truth of what's happening in our solar system, then you'll never be able to make a correct decision on anything. And the illustration I use is, if you're walking through the woods and it's dark and spooky and you hear a rustling in the bushes, you get fearful. You're fearful because you don't know what it is. Now, if a bear comes out, that's bad, but at least you know what the problem is. And you know that you can take action. You can fight the bear. You can run away. You can climb a tree. So I'm not afraid of the things that I can see and the things that I know are happening. We're only afraid of the things that we can't see. And look at how we're whipped around today by our so-called leaders. Franklin Roosevelt, in the darkest days of World War II, said, "We have nothing to fear but fear itself." And he combined all Americans, black, white, young, old, male, female. He got out. Everybody was an American, and we all pitched in, and we got the war fought and won. Okay, today, what do we get? Terrorist alert orange. Another terrorist group thought to have been broken up. A bunch in Florida thought to be connected to Al-Qaeda, which turns out they're not. But we're told this all the time, constantly, constant fear-mongering. And then our president says, be afraid, be very afraid, but keep shopping. It's ridiculous, folks. Come on, stand up and be real Americans. Let's stand up for freedom.
That's it. That's it right there. Jim, I want to thank you so much for coming on and spending the 3 hours with us out of your day. It's unbelievable, and I can't thank you enough, my friend. And I want to try to get you back up closer to November for the 45th anniversary of JFK and do a big JFK show for our audience. How about it?
That sounds good, and we'll see if we can figure out who was behind that.
Oh, I think we might after all. Jim, I want to thank you so much and for coming on with us, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Okay, thank you now.
All right. Jim Mars, ladies and gentlemen, the new book is The Rise of the Fourth Reich, available at Amazon.com. Go out and get a copy of this book. You have to have this book, ladies and gentlemen. That's our show for today. My name is Josh Reeves. I love each and every one of you. We'll see you back here tomorrow for the show. Stay tuned for a special presentation of Bill Cooper, Mystery Babylon, coming up next on Mike Chambers, TNR Live, coming up next. Take care, guys. We'll see you later.